Whether you drive a car,
need a car,
or just occasionally bum a ride with friends,
you've come to the right place.
Join Jill and Tom as they break down everything that's going on in the auto world.
New car reviews,
shopping tips,
driving green,
electric cars,
classic cars,
and plenty of great guests.
This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast.
All right, this is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom. Thank you for joining us today. When you have a moment, do me a favor, do me a solid. Check us out at consumerguide.com. All sorts of stuff there. Plus, our 2026 Best Buy list is going to go up relatively soon, a few weeks, so you'll want to check that out. And remember, you can always subscribe to the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. You want to do that. But you can stream episodes right there on our homepage. I told you I was a little sick.
Yeah, I'm backing away from you, actually.
Yeah, yeah. I got the rasp. Funny story. I was on with Steve and Johnny Saturday night, mm-hmm. and Steve said that I sounded like an FM disc jockey.
Okay.
That goes back, like a jazz disc jockey.
Got it.
That's going back. So how are you?
I'm good.
All right. That is Jill Simonello, contributing editor here at ConsumerGuide.com, North American Car of the Year juror. We're going to talk some knack toy in a little while. And a freelancer. How are you?
That's the second time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good. Good. I'm doing well. I am not sick, and I hope not to get sick by being in this tiny studio with you.
I think I'm pretty late in this process, but I don't feel good. That's weird. Like, it really crushed me Saturday. Saturday late. So Saturday, fun day for me, and it was podcast adjacent.
Okay.
I met Robert Colangelo and his wife. I had never met his wife for dinner down at Carnival.
Oh, yeah.
Wonderful restaurant.
Yeah, that place.
Let me highly recommend the sweet corn empanadas.
Okay.
Holy crap.
Okay.
Their appetizers. Just go order three appetizers and skip dinner.
Got it.
Yeah, oh my God. And then I had a Crown Royal mojito.
Okay.
Which doesn't sound like it would be good. The waiter assured me it would be good, and it was really good.
Okay.
Something about Crown Royal and crushed mint, muddled mint. Very good.
Okay.
And since I was downtown, I stayed downtown and visited with Steve and Johnny at midnight on WGN Radio.
Okay.
That is always weird to go down there at midnight.
Yeah, I don't know where their new studio is.
303 East Wacker, which is right on the river.
Okay.
And you go through Lower Wacker Drive, made famous in the Blues Brothers movie. And it all seems like a Bond film.
Everybody goes to get lost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah. And then you go through these crazy doors that open for you to get into their garage, that building. And then the building's dead. You're walking through a dead building. And then you get up to the 18th floor where WGN is, and it's like you're in like NASA control room.
Okay.
You know, it's wonderful. But you have windows on two sides, so the view is fantastic. So, yeah, fantastic event. So thank you, Steve and Johnny, for having me. And thank you, Robert and wife, for having me for dinner. It was fun.
Yes.
All right. I made mistakes.
Uh-oh.
Couple of them.
Okay.
You had asked a good question the other day, last episode, I think. How much does an amount of money does it take to raise your
monthly payment?
Yes.
Let me fill in for you.
Yeah.
Since your brain seems to not be working.
My brain is not working. Anyway, I had said $25.
Okay.
Raising the cost of your vehicle by $1,000. I think I said $25. It's $18.
Okay.
And that's 60 months for 5%, which is a typical loan right now.
Okay. So who do we have to thank for that information?
I don't know. I think I just worked it out.
Okay.
Yeah.
You mathed.
I also made a mistake last week. We were talking about small compact car hybrids, and I said the K4, but the K4 is not available in hybrid form.
No.
The Hyundai Sonata, not Sonata, Elantra.
Elantra.
Which is kin to the K4, is available as a hybrid.
And the K4 is coming out this year with a hatchback.
Yes, which is kind of cool looking.
Mm-hmm.
I can't decide if it's just weird looking or cool looking.
Why not both?
Yeah, it's kind of space shuttle-y.
Okay.
It's a good look. They have good colors on that car, too. All right, I did a fun poll on X.
Okay.
Are you ready for my poll?
Always.
I gave people four colors, white, silver, gray, yellow, and black, and I said, which was the worst color for a Ferrari? And I have seen Ferraris in all these colors.
Okay.
Which do you think it was? White, silver, gray, yellow, or black? Worst.
White.
White was number one. Number two?
Gray.
Yep. followed by yellow, then black.
Interesting. I would have thought yellow would have been like the best color because that's like, hey, look at me. I'm driving a Ferrari.
I think yellow is like the number two color. Like they're red. Obviously red. Yeah. 80% of Ferraris are red. And then I see a lot of black and yellow.
Yeah, black and yellow. Black
and yellow. Unfortunately, I see white.
Okay.
Which is not good. All right. I just wrote a piece about Tesla price increases. We talked about the Cyber Beast going up in price by 15 grand.
Yeah.
You also know that they killed the rear-wheel drive model. Did we talk about that?
I can't remember if we talked about it, but I do know this is true.
Yeah. So basically, the base price, the entry point for a Cybertruck, if you were still thinking about buying one, and no one is, went from about 72 grand to about 82 grand.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to get the long-range all-wheel drive or the Cyber Beast. Those are the only two models left.
Got it.
So that's what's going on there. September 18th was a sad day.
Okay, I'm like, what day was that?
So it was my wedding anniversary.
Okay.
That's not why it was sad.
Oh, good.
It's a little sad because we remember Ryan Sandberg that day. It was his birthday.
Yes.
Ryan Sandberg, one of the coolest Cubs ever. But it was also the last day they built any Subaru Legacies.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you know, and it's really ironic because I'm actually writing a buyer's guide right now on the Subaru Legacy for the cargogurus.com.
Oh, well, whatever they're going to sell has been built.
Yeah.
It's in inventory.
Yeah, I'm just starting to work on the 7th generation, which is the generation that concluded on the 18th.
So Subaru still has the Impreza and the WRX. Those are cars.
Yep.
Actual cars, but that's it.
Womp, womp.
And it... Based on what I've seen in pictures, the next generation Outback is not a car anymore. It is not a wagon. It is a crossover.
Yeah. Well, you know, and so what's really interesting is the Legacy came out in 1990, and it was it was their way to compete with, like, the Camry, the Accord. Like, they were trying to get into that mainstream midsize market. And, you know, it initially offered front-wheel drive and all-wheel drive, but then quickly moved to all-wheel drive only, and that became a huge competitive advantage along with the standard safety tech.
The Subaru all-wheel drive thing is relatively new.
Mm-hmm.
Like, well, 30, 40 years. Well, it wasn't always part of their heritage.
No, it was not.
And it's not in other markets either. It's very carefully crafted for the U.S.
Yeah.
Europeans, for example, and people in other markets won't pay for all-wheel drive.
Mm-hmm.
They don't get it, and they kind of don't need it.
Yeah.
So goodbye, Legacy. Nice car, actually. Yeah. Always worth knowing about, and you always had the great all-wheel drive. There's a Nissan that just died.
Okay. Oh, yeah, the Aria.
The Aria.
Yeah, and, you know,
the Aria is like the car that never happened.
No, and I have to say I'm not super surprised about it, though I feel like it was one of the best EVs out there.
I do too.
But I just feel like Nissan did not care about it in the U.S. market. They didn't promote it. They didn't get it out there. They didn't, you know, really, I think I had it once in all, you know, in its life cycle to drive. And they just, I don't know, I feel like they... like launched it via press release and were like,
well, they
yay.
Stuttered when they should have had like a big press event and they should have had journalists and stuff like that. They didn't, and they dragged their feet on full production for like 2.5 years.
Yeah.
And then it came out a little bit expensive, and I think it just wasn't the right vehicle for the time. I think they didn't quite hit their cost targets for building this thing.
Yeah.
And it was a little expensive. I think I have the prices here. The price range was $41,000 to $56,000. That's what it is right now.
Right.
On the ground. And they've got the new Leaf coming out.
Yes. Which I'm going to be driving later this week.
Okay.
So we can talk about that next week.
That's good. That estimated price range, car and driver estimated price range is 26 to 40 grand.
Yeah.
So much more affordable. A little bit smaller.
Yeah.
But now that's a crossover.
Yep.
It's clearly a crossover. As opposed to a weird looking shoe.
Wagony,
whatever it
car,
was.
Like
why was that a thing with early electric cars?
Well, it had to look different, so you knew you were driving something special.
But the Leaf always looked weird. The Mitsubishi iMiEV looked really weird.
Well, the iMiEV was weird.
Even the Bolt was a little weird.
It was. It's like a bubble.
But the Bolt was cuter and a little more functional. It had a crossover thing going, and then they added
the EUV.
The EUV.
Yeah.
So they made that work. But the Aria, only 12,000 units so far this year, actually for 6 months, where the Equinox did 36,000.
Yeah.
And just so people know this, even though Tesla's in dire straits, they still sold 135,000 Model Ys.
Yeah.
So it's still the dominant vehicle in the segment.
Yeah.
So, interesting thing about the Leaf, it will have the NACS and CCS charge ports. Both.
Is it, and I thought it had the NACS charge port with a CCS adapter.
Oh, what I read said both. I could have read something wrong.
Because I don't know how you would have both.
You can have them right next to each other.
But how? And that would be super duper expensive.
It might be expensive. But so, there's no reason why you couldn't have both.
But you wouldn't have it on a $26,000 vehicle. And I'll be honest.
Maybe not.
I'm going to be driving it on Wednesday, and so I will be reading the materials on this vehicle tomorrow.
All right, we'll have to check that and get back on that. Because that's interesting. It struck me as a little bit nice, actually.
Yeah, I'm like, I don't know that they would have both. I've never seen that or heard of it on any other vehicle.
There are vehicles that are going to be doing that. So with that sense, and what we're talking about for people who don't know, NACS, it gets you access to the Tesla charging network. And chargers, other outside purveyors of public charging are going to be switching to NACS.
Yep.
So where we used to see, for some reason, chargers that had CHAdeMO and CCS, CCS being the dominant charge format in the U.S., if you're still using CHAdeMO, I'm sorry.
Yeah, the original Nissan Leaf. I think it was the Kia Soul EV. I think used CHAdeMO originally.
Did it?
I think it did. I think there were like two vehicles that had CHAdeMO.
For some reason, there was. It's already dead. There was an English company that was selling commercial vehicles. They were vans. I don't know if they ever got to the U.S. and they were using CHAdeMO for some reason. Like, way to make your vehicle even less interesting.
Yeah, and I feel like Mitsubishi. Outlander PHEV might also use CHAdeMO.
Really?
Yeah. That's a weird factoid that seems to stick in my head.
That's silly.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't want people installing that crap at home.
Yeah.
Because they're never going to have another vehicle that uses it.
Nope.
All right. That's the news. I think everything I've got here. I mentioned Ryan Sandberg's birthday.
I could say it is also, this evening is the beginning of Rosh Hashanah.
Is it?
It is.
I don't want to. Is that New Year?
It is.
Okay.
It is.
I didn't know if happy was appropriate.
Yes, Happy New Year.
Okay.
Or Shana Tova. I think that's how you say it.
There are certain holidays, especially some Jewish holidays, where happy is probably not the right.
Perhaps not. Yom Kippur, not happy.
Like, I'm not
probably
sure.
Probably not.
I'm not sure. Happy Passover?
The light stays lit for 8 days. I think that's kind of happy.
Okay.
I will have to ask my in-laws more about that. I'm new to the Jewish
community
information. I'm Catholic, born and raised, but yes, I will be celebrating Rosh Hashanah this evening with my in-laws.
I assimilated some Jewishness over the years when I worked at Publications International Limited.
Okay,
a lot of Jewish coworkers.
Yes,
there. So, all right. I just noticed that you were driving the Audi SQ8.
Yes.
Which we're going to be talking about.
Yes.
Interesting thing, I drove a different SQ8.
Okay.
Often when you and I are in test cars, they're the same
test cars.
But yours is silver.
Yeah, I don't really love it.
Mine was something that you would not have loved either, I think. Sakir Gold. I'm going to start over. Sakir Gold. It was a strange color, and a lot of people poo-pooed it. They did not.
Gold is better than satellite silver, is what they're calling this.
Yeah. Funny names for silver don't make it less silver.
No.
It's just kind of gray.
It's just boring. And this is such a beautiful car. It is so lovely.
Well, we should talk about what this car is.
Yeah.
It's not a big seller because it is now Audi's flagship vehicle. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about flagships, especially for German luxury makers, it used to be their big sedans. Mm-hmm. The Mercedes S-Class, the BMW 7 Series, the Audi A8. And that's not the case anymore, largely because manufacturers are kind of taking the marketing muscle off of them because they don't sell well anymore. People don't buy big luxury cars.
Yeah.
Part of the problem with Lucid is that the only product they have until they brought out the Gravity was this big sedan, and people don't really want those.
Right.
So this is Audi's flagship crossover.
Yes.
And it's interesting for a couple of reasons. It is counterintuitively less useful than the Q7.
Yeah. It's like a little bit squished in terms of headroom.
Yeah.
Not that I have a problem with it.
So Audi sells the Q3, the Q5, the Q7, and the Q8 in the U.S.
Yeah.
Plus the electric vehicles, which have even e-tron. Number. Yeah, that gets a little confusing. And there is an e-tron version of the Q8. Mm-hmm. I think it's just called the Q8 e-tron now.
Yeah.
But the Q8 is like the Q7, loses the third row and gets the rakish roof line.
Yep.
So you are paying money to look cool and lose utility.
Yes, but good cargo space.
Still.
Yeah.
Still. But it is, well, you start.
So I both love and I won't say hate, but there's some things about it that I just don't love. And first off, it is a very classic interior. And what I mean by that is there is no place for you to put your phone that will actually fit your phone unless you're sticking it in the cup holder. There's like a little slot before the armrest, but my iPhone 16 is too big to fit there.
Okay.
And so, like, that's you know, that so then you have to, like, lift up the armrest and put your phone in the armrest.
So you're summing up a vehicle that's over, like, $127,000?
Like, $36,000.
And your first issue is the phone.
It is.
All right.
Because, okay, I don't carry a purse, so I don't put my phone in the purse so that it can, like, sit on the floor or whatever. Where do I put my phone? That really irked me. That was the first thing that I noticed about this car.
So you would rather drive a 73 Pinto wagon with the optional console because there'd be room for your phone?
No, there still wouldn't be room for my phone.
Yeah, there would.
I mean,
have you ever seen the optional console in the 73 Pinto?
I can put this in the console of the SQ8, but our SQ8, but like that's not the same.
You may have missed the point of this vehicle.
No, I didn't miss the point of the vehicle, but I'm just saying that was the very first thing that I noticed. The next thing I noticed, however, when I turned it on, was the sound of the twin turbo V8 engine, which is a word I can't say, awesome.
Yeah, that is the 4-liter twin turbo.
It's flipping awesome.
And Volkswagen, of course, also the parent company of Audi, mm-hmm. Of Volkswagen and Porsche, mm-hmm. not to mention Bentley. And this engine shows up in those cars as well. This is a heck of an engine with a great pedigree. And yeah, it's fantastic. Twin turbo V8, ZF 8-speed automatic with Tiptronic paddle shifting.
Mm-hmm.
Nice drivetrain.
Yeah.
It's quiet, it's smooth, it's silky, it's really potent. No delay.
So fast. Like, I was merging onto, from one highway to the other on the way here, and I literally just, like, was trying to get around some traffic. I put my foot down, and I swear I was going 100 without even blinking. And I was like, ooh, need to slow down now.
I've driven a lot of electric vehicles lately, and you get used to that sort of silent whoosh.
Yeah.
But there is something about the visceral response of something like this, where the engine is not only nearly as responsive as an electric motor, but sounds good.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's something to that. But this vehicle is interesting, too, because it will seat four people in real comfort.
Yeah. I mean, technically seats five, but...
Yeah, not in comfort.
Well, I mean, unless they're my size.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's relatively practical. It's just you're losing that third row.
Yeah.
But it is a great-looking car. The rakish roofline really works. There's a whole lot here to like. I read some reviews of this. I like to get other people's reviews once I've formed mine. And a lot of them were dinging the ride quality with the larger wheels and tires. The vehicle I drove had the Optic package, which is a lot of black trim and 22-inch black finish wheels.
Yeah.
And I did not think that the ride quality suffered. I thought it rode incredibly well.
I would agree with that.
In fact, I used to think that Mercedes products of the European luxury brands rode the best.
Mm-hmm.
But lately I've driven some impressive Audis.
Yeah.
So I haven't spent enough time in BMWs in the last year or so, so I probably need to see if I can get back into those. But, I mean, all three makers really make incredibly good stuff. But this is an interesting car, and if you don't get the weird-ass color that I had, it's kind of sublime, right? It's stylish, but it's not over the top.
What's the interesting thing is you would probably competitively put this in the same category, perhaps, as the Lamborghini Urus. The one of the top end high performance Porsche Cayennes and the BMW X6 M performance, and all of those other vehicles have a little bit of flash to them, where if you didn't know what you were looking at the RSQ8, like, you might not know what you're looking at.
Right. Well, the RSQ8 is a whole notch up.
Yeah.
That's $138,000.
That's what I was driving.
Oh, you're driving the... Okay.
Yeah.
We're driving different vehicles.
Okay.
I drove the S8.
Okay.
Which is mid-level, but they both have the 4-liter V8, so we're not crazy.
Yeah.
All right, yeah. So you're driving a vehicle $140,000 starting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I drove one that came to... What was it loaded here? I have my numbers. 127 was the vehicle I drove.
Okay.
Okay. I didn't realize both of those are in the fleet. Mm. So you drove the RSQ8.
Yeah.
All right. So we should make that distinction. That
yes.
is further indulgence.
Yeah. And so did your model have the Ultra Suede on the steering wheel?
No.
Ugh. I have to tell you, that was, like, other than, like, the phone and the performance, like, the suede on the steering wheel was the next thing I noticed, and it's just, it's like nails on a chalkboard for me. And that would be an option delete for me.
You know what? This has nothing to do with Audis. A thing that's been bugging me lately, and I don't know why this happens, is when you're driving a car that's got leather-wrapped steering wheel, mm-hmm. which is almost everything these days, or fake leather.
Yeah.
And then somehow, some way, the leather behind the steering wheel, in back of it, mm-hmm. is ripped. And you could feel...
Oh, like a tear.
Like a little tear.
Yeah.
And then you can't get past it.
No.
And there's like a little flap there, and you just want it gone.
You just want it picked. Yeah, I've had it.
And
like
it's always at 3 o'clock where I tend to hold the steering wheel.
Same.
It's like, oh, man. All right, so we just talked about two of the flagship models.
Yeah.
There's also a base Q8 that starts at just 62. No. I'm sorry, the Q7 starts at 62. The Q8 starts about 73.
So, question for you as a tall guy.
Uh-huh.
The front windshield is pretty steeply raked as well. And uh-huh. I'm wondering, I didn't necessarily have problems getting in and out, even though I have a far forward driving position. But I have a friend who did not buy this vehicle, and he's like 6'4", because he kept hitting his head getting in and out of the vehicle.
Oh, interesting. I'm driving the 4Runner right now, the Toyota 4Runner, and I'm having a little problem getting in and out.
But you didn't have a problem in the...
No.
Okay.
No, I did not.
Hmm.
But actually, just to nutshell, Audi's flagship, I really like this. There's a lot here to like. It's an indulgence. It's expensive, and you can get everything that you wanted here in the Q7 and pay less money. And there is an SQ7 as well.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't an RS, though.
Okay.
So that's for people to know. Your final thoughts?
You know, I really like it, but for $140,000, I want all of the things. You know, I want my phone to be able to fit. I want a less black, shiny stuff on the interior. And, I just think it should be everything that I want it to be for $140,000. And it was 99.9% of the things that I wanted. So I loved it, but there were a couple of annoyances that would make me not spend $140,000 on it.
All right, there you go.
Yeah.
You drove the RS.
Yeah.
Q8. All right, I drove the SQ8. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we talk to Herb Weisbaum, the consumer man from checkbook.com. We're going to be talking about car insurance.
Yes.
Stick around.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com. Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom. She is Jill. And Jill, we're going to talk about something we never talked about on the show before, and that's insurance.
Yes.
My daughter just bought insurance, actually.
Okay.
And I think I made a mistake, and we may have to ask our guest about this.
Okay.
But I just sort of let her shop for insurance herself. And I realized that I have an insurance agent, and she ended up buying Allstate Insurance online.
Mm-hmm.
And she told me what she's paying. It feels a little expensive. And I wonder if she went through my broker, through my insurance agent, she might have saved a little money. But people don't go through agents anymore. We might talk about that in a little bit.
I still go through agents.
Do you?
Yeah.
Okay. You seem like someone who might have done it online.
No. Well, so I should clarify. It's my husband's car, and my husband is a master networker. And so he has, like, a lot of friends who are insurance brokers. And
okay.
So, And then when I was looking at my mom's insurance and my mom's, like, renter's insurance, like, we went through one of his friends who's also a broker. So.
All right.
Yeah.
All right. Well, our guest today is a contributing editor at checkbook.org and the host of their Consumerpedia podcast. His Emmy award-winning reports have helped consumers nationwide for more than 40 years. He is Herb Weisbaum, the consumer man. Welcome to the podcast, Herb. How are you?
Thank you. Fine, Tom. I always hear you on the Nick D podcast because I started off and tee everybody up for you. So it's nice to finally talk to you. I was thrilled when he asked me to be on yours.
It is great to be finally talk to you as well. And yeah, for people who don't know, Herb and I are both guests regularly on the Nick D podcast. I think it's like the second episode of every month. And we're on Nick's For the People episode.
Okay.
So, yes, nice to finally talk to you in person. Nick sent me your contact information. I am delighted to have you here as an expert because we have never talked about insurance before. And the insurance market has changed a lot. And as I just noted, my daughter just went through the whole process of buying car insurance entirely online. And what do you make of online and current, just the market in general? How have things changed in the last few years?
Prices have skyrocketed. I mean, there's no question that insurance is so much more costly than it has been in the past. According to the latest statistics, in the first half of 2025 alone, rates have gone up over 8%. That's according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. It's gone up 30% since 2023. Mm-hmm. And according to Bankrate.com, the average driver, the average, pays $2,679 per year. But in places like Florida, Louisiana, Nevada, it's $3,500. In New York, it's $4,000 a year. So costs are it's expensive. And to your question, you can do some good stuff online. I, like you and Jill, use an agent because they're working for me. They can compare a lot of policies. And the agents can also sometimes find policies specifically for that region much better than the big companies.
Okay.
They're tailored to your area. My guy, the last time I price shopped, and I try to price shop every 2 years at the most, a year or two with things changing so much, he saved me over a grand on home insurance and car insurance combined, a grand, and I got a little bit better coverage than I had with a policy before. So that, to me, is the value of a broker. It doesn't cost me, of an agent, doesn't cost me anything. There are brokers out there who do charge a fee, and unless you have some really specialized situation, I see no need to pay somebody, but an agent, yep, makes an absolute lot of sense.
Cool. Yeah, and based on those numbers you just gave me, I feel better about the prices my daughter is now paying.
But the other thing that's really important is it's not just the price you pay for insurance. It's how the company is going to handle the claims. Mm. And that varies greatly. That's the mistake people, I believe, make. Base it solely on the price. You've got to base it also on the company you're dealing with. You know, really great to go to a restaurant where the food's cheap, but it's going to give you a food poisoning. That's not the way to go. You want, you know, reasonable price and a good. So I'll give you the latest numbers. I just looked it up here for you guys from Consumer Reports. They rated 31 companies, and only 7 got the highest ratings from policyholders. They interviewed thousands of policyholders for satisfaction handling claims. They are companies, some of them that you may or may not recognize in your area, the Erie Insurance Group, the Amica Mutual Group, NYCM Insurance Group, Cincinnati Insurance Company, happened to be the one my broker found, Country Financial, Acuity, and Farm Bureau and Property Casualty. Those are the ones that did the best. But if you look on the entire ratings for all these things, I mean, some of the names you know and trust were so big. State Farm only rated 4 out of 5. Chubb only rated 4 out of 5. Travelers, 3 out of 5.
Oh.
Progressive, 3 out of 5. State Auto Insurance Companies, 3 out of 5. Kemper, 3 out of 5. So that's what I look at. Just like when I buy an appliance, price is important. But I look at Consumer Reports for liability ratings because I want an appliance that's going to last. I don't want to spend money repairing it. So that's also a really important part of buying good insurance.
You know, you just made a really good point there. I feel like a lot of automotive buyers will go to Consumer Reports and look up reliability ratings for vehicles or if they're getting ready to buy a new appliance. But I have to tell you, I never in a million years would have thought to look there for ratings on car insurance.
Yeah. And they have rated everything. And by the way, I just looked it up for you, Tom. Allstate rates 3 out of 5
okay.
for claims insurance. So that's a big deal. You know, making sure you have a company that's going to pay your claim if you have a problem, and not just stalling and trying not to pay it.
So, what is driving the big increase in insurance rates lately?
A number of factors. First of all, it's much more expensive. We're driving more expensive vehicles,
okay.
So when there is an accident, it costs a lot more to repair them. The cost of parts and the cost of labor and the whole routine, I'm sure, as you guys know, has gone up dramatically. So that's number two. Insurance claims for medical costs have skyrocketed. So that's another factor driving this up. And then there have been a lot of legal action taken also that have caused the premiums to go up. You put it all together, and it's a reason why premiums are going up.
So I've heard two things lately, and they're contradictory. One is that rates are going up, and I believe they are. and I know mine are, but that rates are going up because cars have gotten more expensive and that the safety equipment on cars is very complex and expensive to repair. And one of the things, too, very specifically, is a lot of this equipment, these sensors are in bumpers. So if you have an accident, your accident is much more, your car is much more expensive to repair now because of all this expensive equipment that gets dinged up. But the other thing is that because of all this equipment, I've heard that accident rates are actually coming down, as they should, right? Because the accident avoidance equipment is pretty impressive, like pedestrian detection and automatic emergency braking and things like this. And that the last thing I heard is that insurance rates should actually be coming down in the near future, but I haven't seen that. But it's a contradictory article or two that I've read. And where do you see these trends going?
Well, if you think insurance rates are going to come down, I got a bridge in Brooklyn I would really like to sell you. It's a great deal. It's an absolute great deal. I don't expect insurance rates to come down. Insurance rates keep going up. Yes, bumpers, for an example. They have all the radar and the stuff in there, so when you ding the bumper in the past, so it was a couple of $100, whatever, to fix it, now it's a couple of $1,000 because they got a windshield. Now you break a windshield, it used to be a simple replacement. Now they got things in the windshield to do all kinds of stuff. Would I trade lack of safety equipment for lower insurance premiums? Not on your life. Those things save lives, they reduce accidents. I don't have any statistics, but I'm just telling you that basically based on all the data that's out there, insurance premiums are not going to go down. They're going to keep going up. And now with the foreign parts coming over, with the tariffs, it's going to get even more expensive to repair vehicles. So you should expect insurance rates to go up even higher because that's already happened. I did a big podcast. It's not going to be dropped till Thursday. Huge podcast on home insurance. And a good portion of the reason why they're going to go up in the future is because of material costs. Some of that is being driven by, like lumber coming in from Canada and that sort of thing. And it's going to drive up, no pun intended, it's going to drive up everything. Well, pun intended, I guess I should say, because that was clever to say drive up.
In terms of car insurance basics, I don't actually understand car insurance and the difference between the different segments of it, the liability and the comprehensive and all that. What is in a car insurance policy?
There are three terms you need to know. I'll run down all three of them. So first of all, there's liability coverage. That pays for damage that you cause. It includes damage to another person's car, the other person's medical bills resulting from the crash that you caused, any property damage you run through somebody's garage or a fence or hit a lamppost or anything like that, any legal fees involved. That's one thing. Second thing is collision. Collision pays for damages to your car from a crash that's not the fault of another driver. And collision is how you pay for repair or replacement. If you're in a single car crash, you hit another car, you hit something, the crash was your fault, or if your car gets hit in a parking lot, or one driver doesn't leave a note there, you run into a tree, something like that. So that's what you have the collision insurance for. By the way, it doesn't cover animals. If a deer hits your car or something like that, believe it or not, that's covered under comprehensive. The third part, even though it was a collision, is covered under comprehensive. And that's the type of coverage you add to an existing insurance policy that covers damage to your car that isn't your fault and that isn't related to a crash. So that's your car is stolen, your car is vandalized, your car catches fire, damaged by weather. Again, if it's hit by an animal. So that's what this covers. And the one way to save money that we recommend and Consumer Reports recommends is that you might want to drop collision and comprehensive coverage if allowed, depending on how you own the vehicle, when your annual premiums exceed about 10% of your car's book value or the vehicle is more than 10 years old.
Okay.
If the vehicle isn't worth a whole lot, then you're not going to get much for it. There's not a whole lot of sense in getting this coverage if you're trying to save money. I mean, who knows? If you have the money to do it, do it. But if not, you might want to do that. In some cases, you will be required to have this coverage if you're leasing your vehicle, if the vehicle is still being financed, and you know how long people are financing their vehicles for now, 7 years or more. But it's just something you might want to consider dropping if you're looking to save insurance. So do that. One thing I want to caution you on is policies that they say this is, the absolute minimum protection you can get. In this day and age, if you can afford it, and I know there are a lot of people that can't, you don't want the minimum. You want enough to protect yourself from serious. I mean, I've seen car crashes where several people have been hurt and the medical bills have been over $1 million. So $300,000 doesn't look like a heck of a lot when you're looking at $1 million liability. The other thing is, because of the cost of insurance, a lot of people aren't driving with insurance. and you have to make sure you have uninsured motorist protection.
I was just going to ask.
That's an extra rider you can put in your policy, because you have no idea if the person who hits you has insurance, and then you got this whole thing and the lawsuits and the stuff. Why not just put that on the policy? It is not a heck of a lot of money, and it will cover you if the person, there's just too many people drive. What happens, Tom, is a lot of people buy the insurance, and they do it to either satisfy the state requirement or something like that, and then they drop it after a couple of weeks, a month, or something like that. So it looks like they have insurance, but they really don't. And that's where this uninsured motorist protection covers you.
All things considered, all the things you just mentioned, what is the minimum coverages you would recommend, like for liability and uninsured motorist and all of the, I think you mentioned four different things. So if you could talk about the minimum you'd recommend.
We recommend at least $100,000 liability per person. So if there were four people injured in that other vehicle or your vehicle, it'd be $100,000 for everybody and hurt or killed, $300,000 per claim. So, again, that's not a whole lot of money these days, and $100,000 in damage, you know. And I have, because I'm on TV and radio and I'm known, and everybody thinks I'm worth a hell of a lot of money, which is, of course, not true for reporters. But I have an umbrella policy that covers me up for $1 million. And it really, I don't have the figure here, but it's really cheap to get $1 million umbrella coverage. It covers you for anything, car accident, somebody trips onto my property. Oh, yeah, we're going to ding that TV guy. There's not a lot there to get, guys, but this is going to take care of that. That's something else you just might want to consider, getting an umbrella policy that would cover you both for your house and for your car. It's really, in the scheme of life, very inexpensive coverage to protect you against a whole lot of potential loss.
Cool. Herb, we've run out of time, but before we go, tell us about checkbook.org and your podcast.
Sure. Checkbook.org is nonprofit. We rate services across the country, so where Consumer Reports does, like products, like washers and dryers, we do electricians and veterinarians and dentists and plumbers and all that sort of thing. And we don't take any advertising because we're a nonprofit, so you can trust our ratings. It's not like some of these groups, Angie's List and others, who may get a little money to goose up the rating.
Uh-huh.
And we're there to help people. I do the Consumerpedia podcast, which is at consumerpedia.org, and write one general consumer story, like I used to do for NBCNews.com. Not based on ratings, but just general consumer advice every week. People who want to go to my website, consumerman.com, you can sign up for my weekly newsletter. It's free. You get what I do every single week, and keep up to the know of what's going on. Consumerman.com.
Herb, thank you so much for your time. We will link to all of that stuff, and we'd love to have you back on the show sometime.
And one, I know you're out of time, but one last thing, 30 seconds.
Yeah.
Do not let your car insurance policy lapse no matter what you do. If you let that policy lapse for a day and then go to buy new insurance, it's like you never had auto insurance. You're going to get clobbered.
Oh.
Make sure your insurance never lapses. Big tip.
So, that's sound advice.
Good,
thank you,
good
Herb.
Good information.
Okay.
All right. Thank you for joining us today. All right. That was Herb Weisbaum, the Consumer Man. We're going to take a break, and when we come back,
Quiz time.
Questions or comments?
Drop us a line at carstuff@consumerguide.com.
That's carstuff@consumerguide.com.
Hi, it's Brendan from Sons of Speed. You've heard me and my colleague Paul on the Car Stuff podcast whenever Jill's out of town. But now you can hear us every week on the We Are Motor Driven podcast, along with Jennifer from Auto Exotica and Harvey from Rides and Drives. We talk about everything from sports cars to trucks to EVs and our favorite, speed. So join us each week by searching We Are Motor Driven wherever you get your favorite podcast.
Welcome back to the Car Stuff Podcast.
And we're back. This is the Consumer Guide Car Stuff Podcast. I'm Tom. She is Jill. And I just learned for certain I don't know anything about insurance.
I know. That was so much good information.
It's funny because people think that, you know, car guy.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you get questions like this too. And then people call and ask me about like tires. Like I don't know that much about tires.
No,
actually.
I very rarely get to test tires.
And I rarely buy tires except for my wife and daughter's car. But and you know where I go? Little plug for our good friends there, but it's a wonderful site to research tires, and that's
yes.
The Tire Rack.
Yeah, 100%. We do that as well.
They do their own engineering testing of these mm-hmm. things, plus the consumer reviews are extensive, and lots of people have driven these things.
Well, and plus I think you can actually call them if you're one of those people who actually likes to talk on the phone. Uh-huh. And you can talk to a real human and they will guide you through the process.
I usually like to do the phone thing, but I did make my reservations at Carnival online. Mm. And that was pretty handy. But now they're sending me all sorts of texts.
Yeah, I don't like using the phone.
But whatever. Hey, you're on social media.
I am. I am on social media. You can find me on pretty much everything that exists at Jill Simonello. So my full name mashed together. Lots of I's and L's in there. And then I also use the hashtag Car du Jour. I've been putting new videos on TikTok every day. And I do full-length YouTube reviews once a week. So definitely check me out. And I like to engage with people.
And you are working out some kinks in the process of putting our stuff up on YouTube.
Yeah. So it was taking me like 3 hours to edit a 1 hour video.
Oh.
So I think I'm going to just put the audio up for a short amount of time and then get back into it. But I've fallen very far behind. I think April is the last video I've uploaded of the podcast. So I will get back into that though.
I found you're thinking about editing a video. I used to go to auto shows more often, and I used to be invited to interview executives. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed doing that. And if you can get 20 minutes with an executive, mm-hmm. you should take it. Mm-hmm. It's pretty precious time. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that I had access to back when Consumer Guide was part of another company was transcribers.
Mm-hmm.
So I would record the interview and like hand them a file, mm-hmm. you know, and then a week later I'd have a nice written thing that I could edit.
Yes.
Oh, this is so much better than me doing this.
Yes. Yeah.
All right.
You didn't mention your social media.
Car Guy Tom. Mm-hmm. Car Guy Tom on X, Twitter, same thing, and Blue Sky.
Got it.
All right. It's quiz time.
Yes.
I lost the quiz.
Well, while you're finding the quiz, I will fill in and say I have chosen a new donut today.
Oh, do tell.
Yeah, I mean, the normal powdered cinnamon donut was there, but there was something that looked like it was not powdered cinnamon. It was just like cinnamon and sugar. And you said it was like an apple.
I think
something.
They call it the apple crisp.
Yeah, so I'm doing the apple crisp that has cinnamon and sugar on it, and it is really quite lovely.
Last week before my anniversary, I was at Mark's Chocolate.
Okay.
Picking up anniversary stuff for my wife, and the owner there says hello. So it's a little out of the way.
Hello.
You and I went to Mark's.
Yes, we did.
Together.
Yes.
Yeah, it's a little out of the way.
Did you find the quiz?
I did, yep.
Okay.
Today's topic, are you ready?
Yes.
Foreign places.
Okay.
You're a geography nut.
No, I am not.
Foreign places, and the question is, does Volkswagen build there?
Okay.
I'm going to give you five foreign places. I better have five here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Okay. Looks like 4. 5. Okay. I'm going to give you a foreign place. You have to tell me if Volkswagen builds cars there.
Okay.
Are you ready?
Right.
And it's not parts. It's got to be cars because Volkswagen builds parts everywhere.
Okay.
Big company.
Okay. I have to admit I'm not very familiar with where Volkswagen builds things.
They build things a lot of places.
Okay.
All right. Number one.
Okay.
Bratislava, Slovakia.
And Volkswagen is a very big company as well with a lot of brands.
Yes, it is. Too many brands.
I'm going to say yes.
Yes. In fact, they build the Q8 there.
Oh.
So, topical.
Ah, how ironic.
Yeah, the Q7, Q8, and the Porsche Cayenne are built there. And I think there's some other like crazy sub, like Skoda and other things there, but those. All right, you're on the board. You have one. I don't know how to pronounce this, but I think it's Gyor, Hungary.
Spell it.
G-Y-O with umlauts, R, Hungary. Gyor.
I'm going to say no.
Yes. They build the Audi A3 and A3 Sportback, I think for Europe. I don't think those are imported to the U.S.
Okay.
You still have one. San Miguel, El Salvador. On the little strip of land that connects North America and South America. El Salvador.
El Salvador. I'm going to say no.
No. You're doing good. You've got two.
Okay.
All right. You're in good shape. Accra, A-C-C-R-A, Accra, Ghana. We don't talk about Africa enough.
Mm-mm.
We did talk to we talked to Sam about Africa.
A little bit.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm going to say yes.
Yes. I didn't know this. The Amarok pickup. It's one of those vehicles that enthusiasts are all like, bring it to the U.S., bring it to the U.S., and then they won't buy it. Mm-mm. Everyone wanted the ID Buzz here. No one's buying that. But the Amarok is pretty cool, and I think it's very off-road capable.
We wanted the ID Buzz in the shorter wheelbase version with a longer range.
Is there a longer range version of it?
I don't know, but we wanted more range.
You'll get more range out of the shorter one, probably because it weighs a little bit less, but I don't think they can squeeze more than 95 kilowatts under the deck of that. All right, you got three. You've won.
Woo!
All right, and finally, Peace River, Alberta, Canada. Peace River.
Peace River.
Does Volkswagen build stuff there?
Does Volkswagen build anything in Canada?
That's the question.
That is the question. I'm going to say no.
No, they do not. A lot of manufacturers do, but they do not. All right, you have three. You've won this, but we're going to the bonus question because that's what we do. We're doing good on time. You want to talk about something after the quiz. KFC, no longer called Kentucky Fried Chicken, just KFC. How many do you think there are in the world?
I am always so far off on this.
KFC locations worldwide.
15,000.
Halfway there, 30. How many do you think there are in the U.S.? This number surprised me.
15,000.
Just 4,000. Okay. 4,075. I would have thought there were more.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know why. Me too. And
they're ubiquitous in where we live.
Well, because Kentucky, like that, you would think there would be a lot more in America than any place else.
Yeah. How many do you think there are in Africa? This number also surprised me.
100.
1,200.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. Very international. And then finally, as long as we're talking about Ghana, how many do you think there are in Ghana?
2. 37. Okay.
You're pretty close there. By the way, the Ghana URL extension is GH. I learned that today. Never saw that before. You know, it's RU for Russia and stuff like that. Yeah. All right. I need you to tell me which of the following is not an item on the Kentucky Fried Chicken menu in Ghana.
In Ghana. Got it. Ghana. Wait, you said 14?
37 locations.
37 locations.
Yeah.
Got it.
Are you ready? The Zinger Tower Burger.
Okay.
The Colonel Tower Burger. The Glazed Yam Zinger Burger or the Veg Burger?
I think it's going to be one of the last two.
Okay, the Glazed Yam Zinger Burger or the Veg Burger? And we have to talk about this tower thing briefly.
Yeah, I mean, Veg just seems very basic.
It does.
And it could be so many things. I want the yam thing to be true.
Glazed Yam Zinger Burger?
Yeah.
I hope it's yams and a zinger, like a raspberry zinger just pressed on a bun. I would eat that.
I would eat something that was zingy, spicy.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with the Veg Burger.
As the fake? No, it is the Glazed Yam Zinger Burger is the fake.
Okay.
The Tower Burgers are interesting. The Zinger Tower Burger is a fish patty plus a potato patty. And the Colonel Tower Burger is a chicken patty plus a potato patty. They're huge looking in the photography. And the Veg Burger was very simple looking. It looked a little bit like a chicken patty. All right, you have won this with three. You did not get, but the bonus question.
Wait, I had four, didn't I?
Did you have four? You got the Canada one. You have four.
Don't try to, take away my points.
All right, you have some NACTOY news. North American Car of the Year news. And what do you have, finalists?
Not finalists.
The consideration. What do you call the first round?
Best of.
Okay.
So essentially, this is like every year there's a whole crop of vehicles that are all new, significantly refreshed.
Yes.
And we look at all of those vehicles and we put them forth to we have 49 jurors right now. So we put them forth to the 49 jurors and say, okay, what are the best of what's new? And we came up with a list.
All right.
So in the car category, we have the Audi A5, the Dodge Charger, which will include both the electric and the six-pack, so the Daytona and the six-pack, the Honda Prelude.
Tell us what that is.
So the Honda Prelude is a new vehicle. It's coming out towards the end of this year, and I believe it is the hybrid. It's a hybrid version.
It is very Civic-like drivetrain-wise, yes.
Yeah.
And for people who don't know, Prelude's a legacy name.
Yes.
It was once a very nice, sporty car. Mm-hmm. If you remember the Acura Integra, it was of similar ilk, although the Prelude was always based on the Accord, mm-hmm. not on the Civic. That's different now.
Yes. Yeah, and so that's new. We haven't necessarily seen anything, I think, other than a prototype right now.
By the way, is that a two-door?
Oh, I don't remember. I think it's replacing...
It should be, historically.
I think it's replacing the, like, the coupe version. So, yeah, I think it is.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So, but yeah, so that, the Kia K4 hatchback.
Okay.
The Mercedes-Benz CLA. And then the Nissan Sentra.
Okay, yeah, and that's all redesigned. If that is redesigned as well as the Kicks was, mm-hmm. and they are mechanically similar, mm-hmm. that should be a very nice vehicle.
And I will say, like, of the vehicles on this list, I don't know what will make it through to the finalists. If I had to venture a guess, I would say Dodge Charger, Honda Prelude, and Nissan Sentra.
I don't think the Charger. If I'm going to guess, mm-hmm. I think the Prelude and the Kia are interesting, and the Sentra.
Okay.
I think they matter the most.
Okay.
And I don't know. I'm very interested in the Prelude. We'll see what that is.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. Okay. So then for the Truck of the Year candidates, I have to tell you, this is always a really tough category because it's very rare that you get like a whole bunch of new trucks in a year.
Right.
So
this used to be a problem for Motor Trend.
Yeah.
Where they would do like Truck of the Year and then there weren't enough new trucks.
Right. And so very often you will have like a full trim version that appears that, you know, it's not a completely new truck, but it's a trim version. So the vehicles this year are the Ford F-150 Lobo, which is a trim version.
Uh-huh.
The Ford Maverick Lobo.
Uh-huh.
And the Ram 1500 with the Hemi engine. So they're bringing back the Hemi. The Ram 2500, which is all new, and then the Rivian R1T quad motor, so new powertrain.
I will bribe you people not to reward Ram for taking a step backwards technologically. Oh, so irritating. I know why they did it. It just feels like regression. It's
yeah.
no good. All right.
And so if I could venture a guess, I think the three finalists would probably be Ford Maverick Lobo, Ram 2500, and the R1T.
What's the deal with the Ram 2500? That's a redesign?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, for people who don't know, the 1500 and then the heavy duties.
Yeah.
What do they call them? Heavy duties at Chevy and at Ram, and super duties.
For Ford. Yeah.
But those are actually a significant class up.
Yeah.
In terms of utility.
They are big, big.
Yeah, they're big honkers, and they're the ones that get the big brand name diesels.
Yes. Yeah.
All right. And then finally, utility.
Okay. So there's a lot of utilities this year. And we purposely...
And we're a little tight on time.
Okay. We purposely increased this category because the SUV segment is the largest.
Yep.
So we have Acura ADX, Audi Q5, Cadillac Escalade IQ, Cadillac Optic, Cadillac Vistiq, Ford Expedition, Genesis GV70, Honda Passport, Hyundai Ioniq 9, Hyundai Palisade, Jeep Cherokee, Lucid Gravity, Nissan Leaf, Polestar 4, Subaru Forester Hybrid, Toyota 4Runner, Toyota RAV4, Volkswagen Tiguan, and Volvo EX30.
Dang.
This is a really, like, there are a lot of significant vehicles.
Can I look at that real quick?
Yeah.
I just want to see what I think might happen here. ADX is not going to happen. Q5, probably not. Maybe the Cadillac Optic, that's electric, of course. I like the new Expedition a lot. Passport, I haven't seen yet. I'm driving the Hyundai Ioniq 9, I think, next week.
Mm-hmm.
And Palisade's very good. Cherokee has a chance just because it's really important.
Mm-hmm.
They need that vehicle in that class. Lucid Gravity, that's interesting. Mm-hmm. A little expensive, though, right? Starts at 80.
Mm.
Leaf could win this. Leaf could win this if it's good. I don't know how new the Q5 is.
Yeah.
But interesting. And Polestar 4, you've driven that.
I have.
Yeah. And that's good?
I can't tell you yet.
Oh, okay. I thought you would drive.
I have driven it, but it's under embargo until the beginning of November.
All right. And I finally have a Polestar 3 coming.
Yes.
So I'll be adding that to my personal fleet experience checklist.
Yeah. If I had to guess what are going to make it through to the final three, I think Cadillac Optic has a good chance. I think Ioniq 9 has a good chance. Oh, and I mean, Nissan Leaf and Polestar 4 are both
It's an interesting list because there's not a lot of esoterica there. It's all stuff that's been significantly updated.
And I mean the RAV4. RAV4 is all new.
That's a big deal.
It's a big deal.
Interesting thing about the RAV4, and we're out of time here, but the RAV4 is coming in down on people's lists of best crossovers, but people are still buying it.
Yeah.
And I think
it's just long in the tooth.
It's a little old, but it is still the Toyota entry in that field, and it's still got reliability and fuel economy on its side, although pricing maybe just a little higher than other stuff. So an all-new one is exciting.
Yeah.
We'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
All right. Big thanks to Herb Weisbaum, the Consumer Man, for joining us this week. Thank you, Jill. Thank you to producer Randy and the good folks here at TalkZone. Let's talk more about cars again.
Next week.
Remember to check us out at ConsumerGuide.com.
The Car Stuff Podcast is produced by J-Turn Media.
To advertise on the show, please drop us a line at CarStuff@ConsumerGuide.com.